Okay.
Quieting into the repeater. This is N0TR, and the name's Tom.
And it sounds like you got a radio to me. Check. KJ4, CTD, Mabel.
Appreciate the replies, gents. Just checking to make sure everything's still working. I appreciate the affirmation that it is a radio.
Good afternoon to you too, Wyatt. And Dad Burt, I can't remember this other gentleman's name, but I know him well from the radio by his voice.
Way back, I went up to the Waynesville Ham Fest today, bought exactly one item, and that's it.
Wyatt.
You and I have talked before. Yes, sir, we have. KQ4 Yankee Charlie India.
That's Bill Frady. He's a famous radio guy. Wyatt is a person that takes care of, I don't know what all at the airports, but he's a very fine technician and works on the guidance system, I guess you'd say, wouldn't you, Wyatt?
Rusty has more piloting experience.
Turn the air conditioner on outside, maybe broadcast some cool air.
Well, I would start right here. As far as my pilot experience, well, most of that has been on video games.
Well, nice to meet you, and it's glad that we all know that you have a radio and that it works. Go ahead, Tom.
I bought something at the Ham Fest, Wyatt. I haven't been outside hardly any. That means I'm going to have heart surgery next month. It would not be a good thing for me. Go ahead, Bill. Wyatt, what'd you buy?
I bought it because I forgot that I needed it, and then I happened to see one, and I'm like, oh, I need one of those. So I bought exactly one bird watt meter element for HF frequency, because, you know, those elements are all done by frequency.
Watt meters are about as far uptown as you can get. I never did own one. I think there's metal things you screw into them in there.
Different adapters for the sides. I mean, all of mine are type in. And then, of course, your plug-in elements. And of late, I've actually been buying the coaxial dynamics elements because they're a little bit cheaper. Excuse me. And they work just as well. But I happen to see that one element there, and I'm like, I'll take it because I tried the lowest frequency that I had, which was, what was that? It's like a 92 megahertz, and that just doesn't quite cut it when you're looking for 7 megahertz or something.
Well, I didn't know you was that smart, but you're quite correct.
Maybe Bill knows he got a radio, but he's not exactly certain if he got a mic or not. I'm sorry. If he's still listening, I'm sorry.
I'm fairly sure that you're not. I don't really care, but I'm fairly sure you're not really sorry about it. Yeah, that whole talking on it earlier, yeah, I know which is which.
You're a professional, Wyatt, and I listen to him quite often.
Commercial radio, is that what you did, Bill?
Yes, sir.
Because AM, because that's what the aviation world goes with. For what should be obvious reasons, but I found out recently a lot of people don't understand the difference between the characteristics difference between AM and FM and why aviation uses AM. But, whatever. Get your 462 mobile.
And Wyatt, if that'll change with this new air traffic control stuff that they're going to install in the next couple of years.
Knowledge, aviation will never go with FM. And FM is where you can get the data bin with to actually do something useful. But, that's fine. And they are moving to SDR-based radios for all their communications, and that helps out a lot.
98.9 FM, so you're not going to get him on FM. But I'm aware I listen to the air traffic control quite often. It is AM. And I never did understand why, because of the capture effect of FM and the Foster ceiling and all the yada, yada, yada stuff it's got in it. And I can't remember. It's been so many years since I studied it. Go ahead, Bill.
Train radios and dogs at the moment.
Just to hear you. Your signal's absolutely perfect, full quieting. So have a nice day if you don't come back. If you do, you're most welcome. Go ahead, Mr. Wyatt.
Bill, and just so you know, 90% of the time I'm not serious, but when I'm at work, I'm as serious as it can be. So that's why I try to have fun the rest of the time.
We trade punches all the time, Wyatt. Well, tell me, why do they use AM? Really, in strict confidence, that's the way it's been for a long, long time.
When it's on AM, you can talk over each other and you can take the different voices out. FM, you can't do that.
Pull on it because it's simplex, isn't it?
That stuff is simplex, but, you know, you can hear other people, whereas on FM, it's really hard to make somebody out if you have two people trying to talk at the same time.
I didn't know that. I always loved hearing when I was in the Navy, hearing the air traffic controllers. Some of the fastest I ever heard was the women at San Diego North Island Naval Air Station. They were just awesome.
These New York area controllers, oh gosh, they just rattle it off so fast you can't even comprehend it. And the other reason is that in the aviation world, differences in modulation, you could do that with AM for your pilot tones, but you can't do that with FM. It doesn't work. So you can't project a location with FM that way. But they want to make everything GPS, but GPS you could jam.
Yeah, they've been doing that overseas. The Russians have, or near their territory. And, there just should be some kind of international law where that's not allowed. And they've even developed weapons to take out the GPS system. One of the first things they'll probably do if there's ever a first strike.
Against the law, because that's an interference with communication. But you know, I mean, by the time your GPS receiver is receiving the signal, it's you know, we're just talking milliwatts here of received power, and you can white noise jam it. You don't even have to, you know, confuse people. You can just white noise jam it.
I didn't know that, because almost every civil aviation pilot I ever flew with recently, and that's not many, are now using GPS on their iPad, and that, I guess it is. I don't know for sure, but I know it's right in front of them.
I first made the first GPS approaches, or were testing them. They were testing them, seems like it was at Paris, and one of the researchers took a USRP, which, you know, $2,000 software-defined radio transmitter, and he jammed the signal. And they're like, nope, we are not using this thing for any higher than Cat 1, and that's the reason why it is. Although I think it has actually been approved for Cat 2 as long as there is a Earth station located within something like 10 nautical miles of the airport.
They still use VOR a lot, don't they?
VORs, not a whole lot of non-directional beacons. Most of those have been expired out, which, oddly enough, you know, it gets right around that, 6,600 meter section of the amateur band. I can probably tune it down there. Because they're designed for 300 kilohertz.
Not familiar with, but I know it's a non-directional beacon. always remember that the Japanese homed in ATF on the radio station in Honolulu to start their attack.
Yes, they were homing in on a non-directional beacon.
This was a radio station in Honolulu at the last part of their approach. They were listening to it.
11, I was ordered to shut down all navigation transmitters that were under my purview, and that was a pain in the rear. I could shut down a lot of them, but some of them required physical presence to shut down, and everybody scrambled to shut everything down.
Pretty amazing how fast they got stuff shut down all over the United States. That was a terrible thing, I'll say that, but just amazing.
Get everything back up, too, but, you know, it is what it is. I'm glad those days are over, and hey, apparently now they're not going to even make you take off your shoes when you get on an airliner.
It's lived in, well, they still do. They lived in West Bloomfield, Michigan, and they come in up there at the Detroit airport when that old boy had that bomb in his feet, I think it was.
I don't know how much of a bomb was actually in his shoes, which is kind of surprising. I mean, because, you know, I wouldn't think you would be able to pack enough explosive in your shoe in order to do any serious harm other than blow your feet off.
Some of these explosives they got nowadays, and I don't know a lot about them. My brother-in-law did. He was on the bomb squad in Wichita for years in the old days, but he's passed now. But with this Simtex and stuff like that, you know, C4 and different ones, and ones I've never even heard of, I'm sure. It just makes you wonder if they can just blow a hole in it, the aircraft will rip itself apart.
I'll have to go look that up sometime, because I never figured out how much a pound of C4 will rip a pretty large hole in something. I just don't know how much off the top of my head.
Like it's in these terrorist bombs and that, what you read in the paper and that. I don't know anything about explosives. I know about progressive rifle propellants, you know, and pistol stuff, but I don't know anything about really explosives. And George was telling me, my brother-in-law, that there's a difference, and it's, well, I know an explosive, for example, would be black powder and static will set it off. But these progressive propellants you use in your rifles and that are not sensitive. You can pour some out on the ground, throw a match in it, and it'll just burn in a linear fashion. You know, it won't explode.
Between a rocket and a bomb is that both ends are closed on a bomb. So a lot of it has, you can make a bomb out of, you know, good old-fashioned, I mean, really old-fashioned black powder. And if you think about it, in a rifle cartridge, you are creating a very tiny little bitty bomb that shoves a projectile out on the weakened end of the cartridge. So, you know, take that however you want.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to look at it. I can't argue that. The average rifle is about, 50 to 60,000 pounds of pressure in there.
Puppy in the road. It's all about the pressure, really. That's really what defines what an explosive is how much its confined pressure can generate. And you need an oxidizer in your fuel, and it all needs to be able to work inside that pressure cylinder. Anyway, I am almost home, so I'm going to go ahead and sign with you, and it was good talking to you, Tom and Bill, if you're still listening, it was good talking to you, and we'll catch you some other time. KJ4 is CTC, clear on your final, Tom.
Okie doke, Wyatt, it's been fun, and we're all trapped inside today, except for you working folks, so have a good day, Wyatt, and 73s.
Zero 2 are clear. 40 Miami, monitor. Good listen to the outside.
What's your call, sir? sign, but you're pretty weak into the repeater. A lot of static. This is N0TR.
Four KM4 GLI.
KO4 GLI, Golf Lima, India. I was writing that down. GLI. And what is your QTH? You're pretty scratchy.
Real QTH is down in southwest Florida, but I'm up in the cradle far too volunteering up here.
Where you was in?
I'm at the cradle far too up off the 276 here, around 11 miles north of Brevard.
KO4HKX lives up around Brevard, and a good friend, and you're getting in a repeater. Sound like maybe you might be on a handy talk. Is that true? My name's Tom.
On a 2YT9800, and Yagi's not pointing towards you right now.
John Samples, Martinez, Georgia. I put a Y in there instead of an I. Oh, I'm sitting there looking at HF and CGLI. And I decided to run your call, and it comes up with this LEY.
So it's Kilo Mike 4 Golf Lima, India.
Well, I apologize for the mistake. Kilo Mike 4 Golf Lima, India. There we go. Bill Anderson, Tallahassee, Florida.
Now, talking to y'all, I used to fly helicopters in Vietnam, so I heard y'all talking about aviation. Love aviation.
This weekend, I was in the Navy and I flew an S-2 Grumman Trackers back in 1967 and 68. I was in the P-3 Orions as a crew member, not a pilot.
UH-1P and UH-1F helicopters in Vietnam, and when I was stateside, I flew HH-43 Pedro rescue helicopters.
Like we had on the USS Bennington was a CH-43s. Like you picked up the astronauts with. Well, God bless you and thank you for your service. You had more guts than a packing house, as far as I'm concerned. When I was in Vietnam, those Hueys, they just weren't too protective of them 27 millimeters and or even ground fire from small arms. It was bad.
Armor protection on us, but we did have two 7.62 miniguns in the door, so that helped out a lot.
I should say so. The funniest one I ever saw was in a hangar at Cameron Bay, and it was a retrofitted P-2 Victor Neptune, and it had 108 grenade launchers in the bomb bay. Instead of a bomb bay, that's what it had. And it had an infrared camera in the nose and a 20-millimeter cannon in the rear, and it carried napalm on the wing stations, and I think Zunis and Havars out there on the other stations, the rockets like we carried on the S-2, they wouldn't let us carry anything on the P-3. That was the darndest plane I ever saw. In later years, I had a Marine friend that took me in the hangar and showed it to me, and he wasn't supposed to, but he did. And later years, I found out that that was a CIA, and they were testing the infrared on it. And that plane was used to draw ground fire.
The people I used to work for, and we were special operations, and we were connected very closely to the CIA. So I love this time over there, and I'm glad to come home, though.
Hey, home, brother. Yeah, me too. It's a good place to be from, and people here, they just, especially this younger generation, they just don't realize what they have after we seen what we saw over there.
Stationed at Cameron there for a little while, about 4 months, and we flew out of Bama 2 at BMT, for operations.
168. The first planes I remember seeing were the ones that my boss said he flew in one time back when I was working in Kansas in later years. And it was those little, there were Ford air controllers, and there were twin engine turboprop. And they were not air conditioned, I know that. I forget what they called them. I can't think of them. They kind of tipped forward, and there was one man set behind the other.
We had some of those that flew out of BMT also and so forth, but I was strictly gunship. Blue gunship, no blue flakes too, but like gunships better.
Yeah, those Ford air controllers, I just wouldn't want to been in them, and then a friend of mine bought one of those planes from an Air Force museum, and it was a Cessna, and it had an engine in the nose and an engine right behind the cockpit and twin tails on it. Did you ever see those?
OV-10, I can't remember sure what the designation of it was, but it was a good old plane.
Yes, it was. OV-10, you're absolutely correct. And the Marine Corps flew them, I believe.
They were good flying planes. I got to fly on one time going back to Cameron from BMT when I came down with malaria. So I did get to fly on one time.
And I thought those things would be pressurized and air-conditioned, but I read an article on them, and they were not. And that would have been really bad over there in the heat.
Open up the doors, you flew.
5 to 15 is what we used to call it. Well, the P-3 was air conditioned, and the crews were getting sick over there, and they, from what I was told, they swiped the air conditioners out of the Army officers' barracks and put them in the flight crews of the Navy's barracks, Quonset huts. They didn't like that at all.
Let's go. The air conditioning unit for C5A before the C5As came in, and we kind of stole that and put it in the barracks.
25?
So we stole the ground control air conditioning unit for the C5A before it arrived in Cameron, and took it and put it in our barracks.
The thing went on. I never forget when we first landed there. My brother and I were over there together, and he took me down, let me see, I think, oh, that was in Stanley Point, I think. Anyways, they traded cases of San Miguel beer to one of the storekeepers for officers' uniforms, because we didn't have greens when we first arrived. No, that was in Cameron. Anyways, in Cameron, they just come down with a big dump truck-like thing and dump the uniforms out there of the Army guys, because they got to reissue every 3 months. But we got these out of a real nice building, and that had to be in the Philippines. And they were officers' uniforms, and all you had to do was take the officers' emblems off of them, and they were all folded and on the shelf, and you could pick out your own size. And I still got one of the Jungle Fatigue shirts up in my closet up here. Those are good uniforms.
Appropriated is probably a better word. A Connex filler of steak from down in Saigon and took it up to BMT, and we had steak every Friday for the rest of the term.
I saw a car pull up to the main gate at Stanley Point, and in the back end of it was loaded with every kind of liquor that you could imagine, and the guys even come around and tried to buy my liquor chit. You could get 5/5 a month or something like that, and I wouldn't sell it to them, and they offered you a premium on it, and then they'd take them into Manila and sell them at a great profit in there. I think that's what you call the black market.
2 and load the helicopter up the pier from Cameron, take it back up to BMT. So we did a lot of pier runs too.
Yeah, we took about every 2 weeks. There was a haul of San Miguel beer from Sangley down to Cameron, and the reason was I didn't drink, unfortunately, but I didn't, never have. And I've tasted beer a few times and liquor a few times, but I just didn't care for it. And I'm a cheap drunk, so I just never did get involved with it. But the guys down there that like beer told me that they put formaldehyde in the beer, and I remember there was two kinds of beer available, and I think it was Schlitz and one other kind. I can't remember what it was. But the San Miguel, I guess MacArthur owned part of that place where they bottled the beer in that in the old days. And that's the beer they wanted. And they said that it wasn't necessarily 5% every time. You might get one that was loaded with a lot more alcohol. But I tried drinking a little bit of it, and it was pretty powerful stuff.
Bombie Bomb 33, and I went to a military reunion a few years ago, and somebody brought a case of that in. It's real.
And it did have formaldehyde in it?
It was frozen beer.
Yeah, they didn't like that at all over there. I guess it was put in there.
Maybe to kill us, I don't know, but I drank a few of them, but I really didn't like them that much.
I remember the San Miguel. My brother talked me into going into Cavite City one night, and we went to 6 or 7 different bars, and he wanted me to drink, and I wouldn't do it, but he'd buy a beer, and I'd take a drink out of each one, and then when he wasn't looking, I'd dump it out. But I still wound up silly as could be before we got back. He towed me into a jeepney and sent me back to base.
And sitting on a set of tables with a Viet Cong soldier still in uniform, and I was in uniform. We were buying each other beers. I said, the bar was going to be out shipping each other. So we were buying each other beers.
Ah, the good old days. Well, Bill, I better let you go. Guys, the pleasure's all mine. It's nice to reminisce. It's a long flight over there, I'll tell you that. And, I'm glad to be home, and God bless America. We'll see you later, Bill. KM4GLI in 0GR 73, Bill. Third, William Anderson.
72
is clear. E8 Papa Charlie Sierra, that's WATCS. Looking for a radio check on 146.610.
I've got a real good signal on you.
You got a good signal down here in Greer, South Carolina, in
0TR. Radio check. I'm calling in from Flat Rock, North Carolina, just north of Tryon. Thank you so much for the radio check. This is WATCS Whiskey 8 Papa Charlie Sierra. I will be monitoring.
73s.